Sometimes we need a little inspiration, and Real Things Living podcast does just that. Real Things Living has a focus on resilience and connection with others. This podcast is brought to you by Gemini Media. Gemini Media delivers the best solutions for communications through collaborative relationships. Hi, y'all. It's Bridget Cutshaw with Real Things Living. Today, my guest is Anastasia Forrest. She is a real estate broker, a self-published author, and a cancer thriver. Can you say hi, Anastasia?
Hello.
I really appreciate you taking the time. And guys, those that are listening, we met through a writer's group, and I think a lot of writers, we love to connect with other writers too, especially Anastasia and I have a cancer background, but her cancer is different than mine. Hers was Hodgkin's. Did I say that right? And her, she was much younger, and she has an amazing story. Can you share? I'm just very curious, what are the symptoms and how did you learn about you having this for the first time? She was 24, is my understanding.
That's correct. Yes. So the symptoms that I had began about a year and a half to 2 years before I was diagnosed, and they sort of just kind of increased in severity as time went on and became less, you know, possible to ignore. The main symptoms were I had some weird itching, like behind my knees, just things like that, various parts of my body. Like I'd wake up in the middle of the night and just scratching, and nothing could really soothe it. Like it wasn't something that I could put some hydrocortisone cream on and it would go away. So that was really persistent. And then the other one was I had night sweats where they ended up being just drenching toward diagnosis. I would wake up and everything, sheets, pajamas, anything near me.
Menopause. Sorry. Think of menopause.
Yes.
But you were only 24 or less, younger than 24. I've heard about Hodgkin's, but I don't know the in-depthness of it. And does it affect your organs? I'm just curious.
Well, so, and then to dovetail off the symptoms, the one that was also really concerning toward diagnosis that finally I was like, okay, things are just not right, is I felt pressure. So unbeknownst to me, I had a slow growing tumor in my mediastinal area. And for those that don't know what that is, the mediastinal area is basically your chest, like underneath your ribs. It's that cavity. It's that chest cavity. And so by the time it was discovered, it was 17 centimeters on the longest side. You can imagine I could feel that like toward the end, I'd be laying on one side, my heart would start pounding. And, you know, like, okay, there's some weird pressure in my chest. It's a cancer of the lymphatic system. So it's, you asked if it affected the organs. So while it was right by my heart and lungs, it didn't infect my heart and lungs, but it affected them because it was pressing on them. Yeah.
And back in when this was discovered, they probably, I don't know if they had enough or different options for treatment, right? Because that's what's going on, which I think is good, is treatment is getting better for people. But I didn't know if you had any kind of special new kind of treatment that was available.
So interestingly, the chemo regimen that I received, it's called ABVD for short, and you might have received some of those drugs, Adriamycin, Bleomycin, Vincristine, and Deoxyribonucleic, something. Anyway, I did that for 6 months. I got a clean scan after two cycles, which two cycles equals four treatments. And the interesting thing today that I just learned recently is if someone had a clean scan after two cycles, which I did, even if their tumor was considered bulky, which mine was because of its size, and it only shrunk about half, they would actually not recommend radiation this day and age, most likely because they've realized the chance of a higher, like late term side effects outweighs the chance that it's going to make much of a difference in your non-relapse rate. So, but at the time I was treated, as you mentioned, things evolve and change, the recommendation was that I receive consolidative radiation, which I did in the form of proton therapy, which is a radiation that simply uses protons rather than photons.
Wow. Yeah, that's,
yeah.
That when you said the word, sorry, I keep thinking of 17 centimeters. That is just huge. What is that for those that are converted to inches? I'm just curious because, you know, in the US, we talk inches. Do you know what that
oh,
is?
Oh, no, you didn't warn me that you're going to throw
a sorry,
math problem
I could
at
do
me.
the math later. I'm one of those people, like I always like to do the one of those people, like my issue is different than yours, but it still affects your body. It affects everything. And I'm so glad that you had treatment that was helpful. And I'm assuming you still have to get a lot of follow-up appointments still for all this.
Well, here's the good thing. In a way they say this, and it's, I think it's a terrible saying, but they're like, if you're going to get a cancer, Hodgkin's is the one to get.
Really?
Which,
I did not
yes,
know that.
They say that. Yes. But the reason is it has a very high success rate. I think it's somewhere between like 85 to 90% chance of cure. And once you don't want, if you don't relapse within the first 5 years, you're considered cured. And the chances of it coming back are really small.
Well, that's
However,
good.
That is good. And I do, I'm very grateful for that. And I really try to keep that in my mind, how fortunate I am.
You are.
But I am. But I guess the thing that ends up being the problem for people like me that were treated when they were young is that we end up having, hopefully, ideally, we have many years ahead of us. And for me, I'm 15 years out. And I, like you said, I do follow-ups. I have to get my cardiac workups done. And I had to start getting mammograms early, basically anything that was in this field, my chest field right. That was radiated. Right now I'm kind of in new territory because I'm dealing with something that, I don't think I have an official diagnosis yet, but I'm pretty sure this is what it is. And the physical therapist I'm going to is like, yeah, that's what it is. It's called right. Radiation fibrosis. Have you heard of that?
Yes, I have radiation scar. I have that too.
Okay.
Because
yeah.
I've had breast cancer and
yeah.
That was fun. But
oh goodness.
Right.
Yeah.
I had it
I can't
twice.
Laugh. Oh no. Yeah.
I've had
The
it
radiation,
twice,
you mean?
and the radiation at the time was recommended, but I wish I had not done it. How's that?
Yeah, I know. And I can't go there. I do. It's like, I wake up in the middle of the night and be like, I should have not done it. I can't believe I did that. Why didn't I research it more?
Right.
Because honestly,
well, you didn't, at the time you didn't know. And I think
I didn't
now,
really. Yeah.
I think more people, there's more options now. And I definitely recommend getting second or third opinions, right? Because I wish I had done that the first time around. But your situation is, you were so young, and I just couldn't imagine. I couldn't imagine having that issue at your age. But you did, you're thriving and not surviving, right? You still had to get through the treatment. And as I'm talking to you, I've also heard of non-Hodgkin's. What is the difference between Hodgkin's and non-Hodgkin's? I'm just curious.
So actually, I just read a book written by another thriver who was initially diagnosed with Hodgkin's. And then when it relapsed, it was non-Hodgkin's. So I have fresh in my mind the difference. The simple difference is Hodgkin's will have an identifying cell called the Reed-Steinberg cell. And in non-Hodgkin's, that cell isn't present. Another difference is Hodgkin's is slow growing. Non-Hodgkin's is more aggressive and quick growing. And thirdly, it's non-Hodgkin's is more aggressive. From what I read in this book that I just finished yesterday, I think he said that the survival rate for non-Hodgkin's was more like 50%.
Wow.
So it's a lower. Yeah, it's a more challenging diagnosis.
That it's scary. Do they know? Because for my example, breast cancer, there's over 30 different types that can cause it. And so I didn't know with Hodgkin's if they had any correlation to what can, is it genetic? Is it environmental? I was just curious if you went down that path or the
it's
doctor.
an interesting, yeah, that's an interesting question. I think, like you said, I think they're, they hypothesize there's a variety of factors, like you mentioned, genetics, environment, but also this is a kind of weird one, but they have also hypothesized that the Epstein-Barr virus may be somehow
Really
involved. Yeah.
interesting.
The
Yes.
one you get when you get mono. Yeah, there's some studies
That's
that show
scary.
there may be
And
may
how
be
your
a
body,
correlation.
your immune system is responding to that, right? It's kind of what triggered it. And that's, is Hodgkin's the most, one of the more common types of cancer? I'm just curious.
No, it's not very common. And I don't have in mind the exact prevalence. That statistic has slipped my mind, but no, it's not very common.
Okay.
From
Right.
what I understand.
I've read about articles about it, but I never really went down that path because I think you're the first person that I've met that
Yeah.
had it. I've read about other people having it. I've met a lot of other cancer thrivers. We just all have different, just the different types of how our body and our immune system. That's really what it, I think it has something to do with your immune system. If it's suppressed in some way and that allows it something to take over, and a virus, some kind of virus can have an effect. And one thing
Yeah.
that, you know, like I said, that treating breast cancer is so hard because there's so many elements involved in that. And that's why you have to be an advocate. And I didn't know at the time. I was 41, but I'm still, you know, we're all still here. And I just think sharing the passion that you have for advocacy is so important. So what do you think is the, anything that changed in your lifestyle? You know, what did you tweak? Or I'm just curious on that.
Oh, as far as the advocacy
Yeah,
goes?
for your advocacy in your life, did you make changes in your
Yeah.
lifestyle or?
Well, speak to your, to the advocacy, because recently that's become a really forefront for me, partly because I started experiencing this pain when I laugh of my muscles just kind of clenching up, and I'm like, what is going on? And you can go to your PCP and you know, as like me, that they don't know how to deal with people like us.
Correct.
So I plugged into a long-term survivors community on Facebook, particularly for Hodgkin's. And when I got in there, I was like, oh, I heard them talking about the same kind of stuff. And it's like, oh, radiation fibrosis. It would have taken me a long, you know, the doctor probably never would have figured that out. But I'm like, yeah, that sounds a lot like what it is. So anyway, that motivated me to get health insurance and to go like really seek some specialist care, going back to my radiation oncologist, looking for a survivorship clinic, looking for some physical therapy. But plugging into the group made me aware of a wonderful organization. It's a non-for-profit that was established in 2016 by a group of Hodgkin's lymphoma survivors. And basically they established the group because they were looking for these answers about various symptoms they were having years down the road. And the women who established it, one of the women in particular, Erin Cummings, she's a 51-year survivor. So she was treated as a child. And so she's seen a lot of changes in the industry, and she's also experienced a lot of the, you know, little hiccups and challenges. It's not little, I don't want to minimize at all, because they're big challenges. You know, long-term survivors face things like breast cancer and other kinds of cancer and heart problem. I mean, there's a lot of things that can happen. But anyway, it's been really wonderful plugging in with this group. They're having their first conference actually in Boston in June.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to be a panelist and speak about my experience. And I just have to say, like, advocacy and also just the connection that's coming from that is so helpful for me mentally and physically, because it's helping me figure out how to best care for my body in this stage I'm in, where I'm
I think,
at.
yeah, advocacy is a great way to share stories and help develop more solutions. Is that the right word? It helps
Yeah.
people think and think outside the box.
Yes. And she connects with doctors that are specialists in long-term survivorship and has their insights, has it interviews them like this on YouTube, and some of those people will be at the conference. And you're right, it empowers you with information, and enables you to be an advocate to your doctor as well. Like, I can go back to my doctor and be like, look, here is what, you know, here's what I need as a long-term survivor, and just help everybody stay connected and
Well,
know as
might
much as they
you
can.
right. It just might give you some purpose too, I think, right? And some adding
Absolutely.
value to the world. And I just think it's, I just love that we have that connection, you know, with advocacy and take care of your body. Does that make sense? And
Oh,
you
yeah.
got to listen to your body, and some people ignore it. Some people, I don't know, they just blow things off. But I had kids, and you didn't have kids at the time. So, but now you do, which I think is fantastic. So, do they have a, just in my popping my mind, do they have any concern about you getting pregnant? I'm just, you know what I'm saying? After going through all this, do they?
Well, they do say after treatment, don't get pregnant within a year. And obviously, I mean, not obviously, but it makes more sense to give a few years so you see if, make sure you don't
Body.
relapse. Yeah, and give your body time to recover. But no, other than that, I had a normal pregnancy, and there weren't really any special things I had to do or special concerns or anything.
That's good. I mean, that's good. It's just you're amazing role model, and you're trying to help everybody, and you're being open about it. And this made me think too, did this inspire you to write a book about this? I know you're a self-published author. You
Yeah,
figure that.
actually, I'm working on something. And so my mom, I kept a blog during my cancer journey, as sort of a journal, sort of a coping mechanism and a way to connect with other people and maybe help someone else. And so I had ended up taking it offline though, like years later. I was like, I don't want this out there anymore. It's an old part of my life. My mother, she's a wonderful archiver of things. Turns out she had printed out the whole thing, every single entry. So she brought it. I said, "Mom, I think I'm write a book." She's like, "Okay, I have some stuff for you." She brought me three huge binders full of my blogs, and so
Wow.
I'm kind of I scanned them all in, and right now I'm just kind of putting all of the texts together. I don't know if I'm gonna publish it as entries, as almost like a journal, like, or if I'm gonna actually write, a narrative.
Right. It probably rereading it will help. You know, you rethink how you're going to share that information, right?
And it's a little hard because I really have to well, it's traumatic. It's traumatic, and part of me is
Oh,
just like, I don't want to think about that.
yeah.
But at the same time, I feel like I have a little bit of a, I don't know, a responsibility or at least an opportunity to put something out there to maybe be a light for other people going through it.
They need to have some hope, right? And that's kind of how I think I like the word hope. Some people think it's cheesy, but I like the word hope just because it shows you that you've got there's a path forward for you, and you just got to find a way to make it
Amen.
happen. Or and then you have a great support group, your mother, like for example, right? I'm sure that was hard on her too, being the parent of her daughter. I just couldn't imagine. It's just how I'm thinking as I'm a mom, but I have boys, so they that was my hope. I wanted to be there for them because they had to see me go through weird stuff. But it's I don't know. It's just I think it's tougher as a parent. I mean, your mom, does she share anything? Does she have anything to share with other people? Does she talk about it? She just.
My mom was she was wonderful, because one reason that it was so helpful to have her with me at appointments and things like that is she's a medical assistant.
Oh,
So
okay,
yeah,
good.
she's used to reviewing blood work, and in fact she had been saying something was off in my blood work from the time I was 14. There
Oh,
was like
wow.
a certain level that she was like, this level isn't what it should be. It's a little off. And she took me to specialists and they were all like, yeah, it could just be normal for her. It could be normal for her. So my mom had her eye on that. Like, it's so weird because the one of the specialists she took me to when I was a teenager ended up being an oncologist years later. So mom had always had my back. And honestly, she was an advocate for me when I had a reaction to one of the drugs that
Oh,
put me in the
wow.
hospital, and she insisted on them doing a certain test that ended up being just a game changer because I was not doing, it wasn't looking good. And she insisted on them doing a PET scan and diagnosing bleomycin toxicity, which is what it was. And I attribute, I honestly am like, Mom, you saved my life. She also argued against me getting the radiation, and I'm like, I wish I had listened to her.
Well, she probably knew more stuff than right, but you know, it's also your body too. You know, you're trying to, right. It's
and
your
who
body.
Knows? Right. Yeah, and it could have made it could have made a difference, even though it's just a 5% difference of like, yeah, you're 5% less likely to relapse if you have this radiation. I could have been in that 5%. Like, I right. firmly yes. believe that
yes.
it happened the way it was supposed to.
Correct. And then just take a reflect on that. And I think that is really good that you have your blog post that I thought was funny, not funny, cool that your mom printed it out, but you can look at all this and help you even, I understand it's traumatic, but I think it's important that you're sharing, you know, you have a positive outcome. You're still here. You got a positive outlook. And the other thing that popped up, yeah, I heard you mention the word sobriety. So what did that, I'm sure that has something related to being an issue of dealing with the health issue.
Oh yeah. No, I'm so glad you brought that up. So like a lot of young people in their 20s, I consumed some alcohol, and I'd say probably a bit more than my peers at times. I grew up a gigging musician. I grew up in bars. You know, I don't want to say grew up in them. I wasn't like five, but you know, like teen years, latter teen years, early 20s, I was playing in a lot of bars and people around me. It was like an environment that I was used to seeing people drink a lot. And so having a drink at like 12 when I was doing a gig wasn't unusual. And so we talked about environment, and I don't know, but I'm sure, I mean, I don't know, but I don't think that the amount of alcohol I consumed prior to being diagnosed was helpful to my body. And so anyway, it's always been like a little bit of a coping mechanism for me. Even when I was getting treatment, my oncologist, he's like, well, once you're feeling better after a few days past your chemotherapy, you can have a glass of wine here or there. And I did. And it for me, it was just like this comfort thing. And unfortunately, I don't want to say unfortunately, it all happened the way I was supposed to, but that attachment continued past my cancer. Like right. if something bad or scary happened, or I felt lonely or bored or whatever, like my go-to tended to be open a bottle of wine, you know, have some wine. And it's not like I didn't really hit a rock bottom because I was so used to it just being like this medicine, almost like using it like medicinally,
right.
You know, in a way. But it was actually during COVID. I realized that I was taking a walk and had this thought. I was like, do you really want to be doing this for the rest of your life on this merry-go-round of, you know, having a few good times drinking and then waking up one day with an awful hangover and then, you know, taking a break and then starting that over and over and over again? Like, do you really want to keep doing this? And so I answered my own question. I was like, no, well, let's not do that anymore. Let's quit. And so I embarked on that path of just complete. I'm the kind of person, it is better for me just to not, I'm not a moderate individual. And so
right.
for health reasons, much better, much better.
Right. That's kind of, did you have help getting, or did you go cold turkey on your own? I say cold turkey, sorry.
Well, I wasn't clinically addicted, so I didn't need any kind of like rehab or anything. I was more like a, you know, a gray area drinker is what they call it, you know. But I actually have a neighbor who is pretty outspoken about her sobriety, and she was very enthusiastically encouraging of AA, to use AA. And so I would tune into these Zoom meetings, and I did, you know, the first 90 days, I think I tuned into a Zoom meeting every single day.
That's awesome.
And it helped. Yeah. Having that community helped. Yeah.
Right. I think communities are so healing. And just like writers, like I mentioned earlier, we met on a writing group. Writing, you know, it can be healing. You don't have to make it public. But I think it's awesome how you're sharing your stories publicly, because people can relate to you. People try to hold that stuff in. And I think it's just, you have an amazing story. Another thing, another quick question. How did you get into real estate? I just think that it's, I mean, you went from a musician to a realtor. What prompted you to do that?
Yeah, that one I know. It's hard to put those dots together. My husband is a general contractor.
Oh, okay.
And he's in the housing industry. And when I was pregnant with our child, my second child, he suggested, he's like, you know what, honey, you're really smart. I think you could be really good at real estate. You want to take the course with me? You want to get into real estate? And so I was like, sure. So it's been a really wonderful thing for our family. It's enabled me to help a lot of people and develop new skills. And also it gives me enough freedom that I am able to also pursue my more heart-centered interests, you
Right.
know? So it's been a great thing for our family. Yeah.
I think that it's so cool. You're just, I like your, I see you as a free spirit. Is that the right word? I mean,
Yeah.
you are. I see that. And I think that is so, you're embracing that. You are thriving and you are passionate and you're helping people in different ways. That is about health advocacy. I call it health advocacy because that's kind of what your Hodgkin's and your sobriety thing is kind of connected to, and then you're helping people find housing, which is I shouldn't say, I don't know. I had a quick question. Is it that really that hard? I read a lot that it's really difficult now. At least in my area, they talk about how hard it is, affordable houses. I live in the Atlanta area, how crazy
Oh,
it is here. I'm not into real estate. I just didn't know if that was true or is it just clickbait that I'm seeing.
affordability. No,
Yes.
affordability is an issue. I'm also in a tourist town. I'm in St. Augustine, Florida, the
Okay.
oldest continuously inhabited European settlement in the US. And a lot of people are moving to Florida. Yeah, it's hard. You know, there's people that work really hard, like as teachers or police officers, and some of those people have trouble affording housing
Yeah.
in the city, which is extremely sad. Yeah, and we also have insurance. The insurance costs, because we've
Oh,
had a few
that's true. You're
hurricanes,
right. Florida
have
has a lot
gotten.
of issues. Yeah. And I think
Yes.
our
So, yeah.
And just costs of anything everywhere is just affecting our lives. And
It is. Yeah.
I'm a believer of trying to be proactive in planning, right? And you are too, based on your experiences. So before I wrap this up, so what do you think is one or two takeaways for the listeners for you based on your experience and your advocacy? What do you recommend or for them?
Well, number one, I recommend learning to be your own best friend, learning to really love yourself and love yourself in your most vulnerable moments, love yourself on your bad days, and like having a life-changing experience, you know, like cancer. You just develop a lot of compassion for yourself and be proud of yourself. Like, we're here. Like, it's amazing that we're here. It's amazing that we're having this human experience. And it's incredible the things that some of us go through, you know, in the world. I mean, I'm thinking other countries and all the variety of experiences that we can have on this planet is pretty overwhelming and astounding.
Right,
So just,
right.
I'd say just have a lot of respect for yourself, a lot of love for yourself. And that'll actually encourage you to want to take really good care of yourself. For me, like dropping alcohol was a great act of love, you know, for myself. And it felt good. Like I'm growing into this person that really loves who I am. And I love, you know, love this unfolding experience because it is my life. So that's number one. And number two, connect with amazing people like Bridget. Connect with people who light you up and people who are positive, looking in that windshield rather than that rear view. You know, and using the experiences from the rear view to illuminate their present and their future in an empowering way. People that inspire you to move forward and cope with anything that comes your way, knowing that we are not alone, we have friends, and we're all in a way in this together.
I love that. That's a great wrap up. That is so very inspiring. I find it inspirational and motivational and empowering. I like the word that you used, empowering. So where can people learn more about you, Anastasia? How they can they connect with you?
Yeah, of course. I am pretty active on LinkedIn. If you want to connect with me on LinkedIn, that would be great. I'm also If you want to go to my website, anastasiaforrest.com, it's just my name and .com. You can read more about the different, you know, things I do, and my blog's out there, and there's some books and services and stuff like that. But I'd love to connect with anyone over social media. I'm pretty active, like I said, and a little less so on Facebook, but I'm out there. So love to hear from you.
Well, that's great. And for those that are listening, I will have the links in the description section. And this was awesome and very, very inspiring and enlightening. And I really appreciate you sharing your story, Anastasia.
Oh, I'm happy to. Thank you for inviting me to be a part of your wonderful show.
Thanks again, everybody. Have a great day.